we have in attendance Representative Terry Martin, Representative Chris Davidson, and Representative Dave Donnelly, and Representative Kurt Menard. The order for this afternoon's hearing will be HB 68, HB 74, HJR 4, HB 14, and HB 12. We're taking the last item, second to last, to accommodate the two sponsors. So the first item before us is HB 68. We have held a hearing on this previously. We have a proposed committee substitute in front of us, and we have a memo from the prime sponsor, Representative Mike Miller, requesting expeditious action because this has been scheduled for a CRA committee hearing on Monday. So they'd very much like it if we would pass CS HB 68. So if I could have a motion.
Madam Chair,
Representative
I would make a motion that we pass it on the committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Without objection, we will pass on 68, and if the committee secretary would please pass it, we will sign it out right now.
It's a new form of committee blackmail.
No, I think they figured that we'd worked it over enough the last time.
Yeah, don't need those pieces.
Unless you really want to, we'll let it go. Okay, the next item before us is HB 74. We also had a hearing on this bill, had some discussion about 6 versus 7 digits in the license plate, and as might not surprise anyone, the new fiscal note has come back indicating that there would be a substantial cost associated with that. We have received a note from the principal sponsor, Representative John Sun, requesting that we not pass out the CS, but that we pass out the original House bill. So, unless there's any additional discussion, could I have a motion on House Bill 74? Representative Terry Martin.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I think what I'd like to do is formally withdraw the amendment requested for 7 digits first and then pass out the.
Is there any objection to the withdrawal of the motion? If not, it's withdrawn.
So now back to the original bill. A little explanation. I think that right now there's a lot of questions and concern that people want the 7 digits in there. I'm surprised, but please. In order to expedite this bill, let's work it in another form and let the Senate worry about it, which might be quicker in the long run. So I'll move the bill, the original bill.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to moving out House Bill 74? If not, it will also move out of committee, and after we finish signing 68, the committee secretary would please give us the original for House Bill 74. The next item is HJR 4, which is the nuclear freeze resolution. As you know, we heard from over 65 individuals on Wednesday who testified on this resolution. If I might ask the prime sponsor to return to the table, Representative Nilo Kopanen, I believe he has a CS to propose for us.
I think you have a copy of the CS.
It should be in. Should be the first thing in your file.
Actually, the proposed committee substitute brings some of the numbers in the whereas is up to date and strikes out a portion of the original bill that speaks of devices capable of carrying, et cetera, which is two, and substitutes the simple wording nuclear weapons. So it specifically speaks to the question of nuclear weapons and not of, you know, a device capable of carrying a nuclear weapon could be a suitcase, I suppose. This was language that had been put in the last session in an attempt to be more precise, and I think ended up obscuring the question. So it substitutes the word nuclear weapons for that. In other words, it speaks directly to the question of nuclear weapons rather than bringing in atomic power plants or submarines or whatever, or suitcases.
Does anyone have any questions for Representative Copeland? Representative Martin.
Madam Chairman, I have a lot of questions, but those two so far are good. They've had every own bill. Neat.
Representative Martin, would you like to move the committee substitute?
Not at this time, no, ma'am.
Representative Donnelly.
I'd like to move if we consider the committee substitute.
If there is no objection, we have the committee substitute before us at this time. Representative Martin, did you have another question?
Yes, I have a number of questions, but I can't find them. Oh, here, I'm sorry. Just now I got the packet. I'm going to pass out this to the committee for right now, mainly because, Madam Chairman, I'm going to beg your indulgence for patience and love and understanding. Because, you know, when you send out a resolution, I think it's extremely important that your wherefore and whereas and whatever defenses and that you're going to use for your major push are verifiable. And in this case here, we had some statements made in the resolution that I'm not so sure are verifiable. For instance, when we talked about the other cities and or nations that have passed, and this is page 1, line 14 and 15, I'm not so sure. I've never seen evidence. I know Representative Copeland said the other day three nations have passed similar resolutions. But the ones I have seen specifically talk about, like Bishop Kenny did, that the bill didn't go far enough because it's not talking about world peace, world free of nuclear weapons. And I went over to see him this morning because I know we do talk about the value of modern technology, which he's not necessarily, I'm sure, is not against modern technology. And if we're including all those nations in this phrase, that supposedly are similar to ours, that's not necessarily so. For instance, the Yukon territory, for people don't have that, I have the 5-page verbatim description of their debate. They want to be very sure that they will allow peaceful usage of nuclear energy, because in the village of Unitac and in the Fort Nelson, they have for years now used what they call the slow poke nuclear energy devices for complete energy within their villages, and Canada has been very successful at that. It's something that perhaps we should look into in Alaska and meet the energy needs of our smaller villages. So the Yukon Territory people made it very clear, and they said, and they sent those to the United Nations for world peace in reducing and completely getting rid of war materials and war testing of nuclear devices. And this is what I'm concerned about. We're saying things in a sentence that everybody might assume, well, they're saying the same thing we are and we're not. Secondly, when we're talking, it's not specifically in the bill, but there's a lot of people said, the people said in the initiative that we passed last year, this, this, and that. Well, this letter here will explain to you exactly what the bill said. And we went over that, the military people during the summer on that initiative, and in at least four different meetings, and they finally concluded, yes, this is what we want. World peace, no weaponry, and we're backing the Reagan proposal to an unilateral, verifiable, even on site, verification of who's doing what and weaponry of nuclear. But I don't think there's anything that says that we are limiting to national energy policies. And we do have a couple words here that I want Mr. Copeland, Representative Copeland, to explain to us, like benign. What do we mean by benign? We don't mind those. We're fine. 40% of the U.S. Navy now is running on nuclear power, and that has a tremendous savings, safety, efficiency, and everything else for our military people. It's much safer than the guys that used to get in the old smokers, oil burners, and submarines and did die. So what do we mean by benign? Should we identify that word? Everyone that has smoke detectors in their homes ought to look at the caution there. And it gives you very clearly that this is atomic radiation. And you must dispose of those in only specific ways. I wonder if the avid citizens who are for world peace and nuclear weapons realize what the smoke detector is doing. So, you know, in this case, it's here.
Exclamation point.
Atomic energy.
So there's another, there's one absolute contradiction here. On page 3, it's like page 2, line 3. Compare that to line 24. In the first one, we're talking about contamination of the region by the Arctic Circle. And previous use of testing and nuclear weapons caused permanent damage to the health and welfare of the people. In line 24, we're talking about that the people of Alaska desire to continue to live in a free environment of the world that is peace and safe from nuclear pollution. I don't think you can have the two opposites in the same whereas, because that contradictions. If you're talking about the harmful effect on Alaska with nuclear devices from Russia, from China, then how can we say we've been living in a free, safe, nuclear polluted area?
Representative Provenin, do you have any observations?
Well, this is the observation that the period of nuclear fallout did come to an end in the 50s, and the particulates that they were worrying about had a half-life of approximately 20 years. The heavier dosage actually lasted for a decade into the 60s, and by the end of the decade of the 70s, we just continued monitoring it because there was no new infusion of, and so we have returned to a sort of relatively stable period so far as nuclear radioactive contamination is concerned. So we've gotten, we received quite a degree of fallout all over the state, for that matter, in the continental United States during the decade of the 50s. Strontium-90 has a shorter half-life, and therefore the problem is no longer a problem. But it would be if they start testing again or somebody let something off.
Let the record reflect that Representative Red Boucher has joined the committee. Does anyone else have any questions? Yes, Representative Dunley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not so much a question as an observation. Representative Martin's memorandum, final paragraph, discusses the implications of the language in the entire state of Alaska as part of the mutual verifiable treaties. As one prior legislator was fond of saying, I've always read between the lines in that matter and felt that implied that the comparable portion of the Soviet Union would be free of nuclear weapons also, and that's the only way that such a verifiable treaty could be obtained. I also like to make the further observation that being that the case, and given our policy and avoid a first strike capability and our apprehension about Soviet first strike capability, the absence of nuclear weapons in Eastern Siberia would be of immense benefit to the security of the United States, where the presence of nuclear weapons in Alaska would not be nearly so great, since they would be indefensible from an easy Soviet first strike due to their proximity to the Soviet Union and the short amount of flying time from Eastern Siberia to any place in Alaska. So I would agree with Representative Martin's observations as to the language of the entire state of Alaska, but I think that's implicit in there being any mutual verifiable freeze or prohibition of weapons in those areas, that a corresponding area in Siberia could also be nuclear free.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes, I think the writ of the United States government runs essentially to Alaska. We're hopeful that the Canadian, Northern Canadian territories also be included in Greenland, of course, and that the other half of that would be the agreement of the Soviet Union to make their Arctic and subarctic from the Finnish border to the Chukchi Peninsula, which is a much larger area. But I would have to leave that up to the negotiators sent over by the United States government. In other words, we're essentially, as members of the legislature, are acting on the implicit statement of the people of Alaska in voting for the nuclear free, and essentially forwarding to our government our willingness to have the entire state be included, asking that the entire state be included in those negotiations and hoping that they can get as much out of the Soviets for that as possible.
Are there any other committee member comments, observations, questions? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the perfect definition, which might be worthwhile putting in here, when you mention the entire state of Alaska, are we going to put the 3-mile limit on water and or the 200-mile recognized by fishing, if nothing else, And then also, see, that's a crucial, important thing, because Canada, just last year, ironically, she doesn't have the machinery or the military personnel available, but she is slow but surely doing what Alaska is doing, developing her native frontline defense, National Guard, to become aware and how to spot the Soviet submarines that have been popping up under the ice cap, particularly in Canada border, not the United States border, but I guess they're more leery of the United States. We know that our people out there, the native people, know how to spot those ships if they aren't coming up. But they certainly are coming up in Canada, even to the point where they ask the United States for help. So here's the Army working to prevent our own Navy, our own people, from surveying as much as possible with offensive machinery, nuclear machinery, but it has no impact whatsoever on Russia. And that's what do you mean by the entire state of Alaska? The water zone?
Representative Martin, would you care to propose a specific amendment to clarify that, or is...
Well, here's the maker of it. I personally don't want to make the bill any better, to be honest with you.
I have no particular desire to delineate a mile and a half, 3 miles, 15, 20, or 12. I think that that is entirely up again to our international negotiators. If they are willing to propose and get the agreement of the Soviets, for example, to close the Bering Sea to nuclear vessels of both sides, which is technically feasible, you know, they can put the radio sound across there, and but I don't think that that kind of detail, which is really a subject of intense secret negotiations on the top level, you want to give them federal government a little slack, don't we?
I'm going to give them all the help we can, and the best way is to keep up with
the
enemy.
I said slack, I didn't say help.
Any other committee member comments or observations? Representative Martin.
Clarification then. On page 3, line 7, prevent all parties, including military, from disposing of radioactive and nuclear waste material from the Arctic. Representative Kupner, you know what the University of Alaska Fairbanks is doing better than the rest of us. And I was wondering, to what limits are we perhaps potentially preventing them to continue their Arctic research, their high-altitude research, and things like that? What if the radioactive materials that they dispersed with the finding of the northern lights and some of the other atmospheric discoveries they're trying to make up there?
Well, that's not nuclear waste material, they're ionized material.
You said radioactive and nuclear waste.
Again, the material that was used was extremely short half-life, about a second, which gave the burst that was illustrate the ionization. There is a portion of the resolution that specifies that we don't wish to interfere with medicine or other safe and benign uses, and in fact included for your backup in a series of citations of materials such as the radioluminescent lights which are being used and the like. However, there was an incident where when the military closed down the experimental reactor at Fort Greely, they pumped the radioactive coolant into the Tanana River, which was not a thing that would be approved of under this, and we would hope that such an incident not occur again.
Any other committee members? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I simply would like to state that I think we should exercise caution in tying the hands of our federal negotiators through too much of overzealous definition, and I would move the committee substitute before us.
Is there any objection to moving CSHJR 4 out of the State Affairs Committee? There is an objection.
With one question. On page 2, line 2, I tried to look this up, and I admit that a lot of people realize that, you know, a dumb individual there, uneducated, so maybe you can help me. What does a SAAMI people? I looked that word up and couldn't find it. S-A-A-M-I, SAAMI people.
SAAMI are the Laplanders.
The what? Laplanders. Why don't we say Laplanders?
Well, because they call themselves
or other nomads. No.
Michael and Sosami.
All those in favor of moving HJR out of committee as amended in the CS, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say nay.
Aye.
Nay.
The bill will move out with, the resolution will move out with individual recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Coconut.
Boy, I can't even smoke anymore.
Take up HB 14, an act establishing a state employee incentive award system. Next. So Representative Coconut can finish his time in the hot seat.
Sorry. My word for the day.
You just say the idiot because you want to trip this lap.
I think it's confusing, Laplander and Colin Sosami and the Finn Circle, the Swamish, but nobody uses that.
If there is anyone who has not yet signed up to testify on either HB 12 or 14, would you please do so? I'll get your name.
No, the incentive thing, like the federal.
Okay, all right.
Representative Coconut, nice to have you back again.
Thank you, I needed the exercise. For the record, my name is Neil Coconut, I'm representative from District 21, and the prime sponsor of House Bill 14, the State Employee Incentive Award. This system, which some of you are aware of, was actually pioneered by the state, by the federal government. A number of states have adopted it. You have a position paper here in front of you. I believe very much that it is in the state's interest to put such a program in place because in the course of discussing state budgets and the operation of the university system and the health and social services, I have received a number of good suggestions from individuals in the lower middle rank of either state or local government. Of course, it is not my place to put those particular suggestions into effect, nor am I always certain that they would necessarily work. There is some inertia in any bureaucracy, in any organization, toward the adoption of some of these recommendations, and people sometimes feel, why should I make a suggestion, because it's not going to be listened to and not going to get anywhere. I think that this particular form of incentive program, which would have to be, like any law, brought into effect by regulations by the administration, will be very useful. The top award is $25,000, which is an exceptional case. In most cases, the awards are for $10,000. But in the past 4 years, I've heard all kinds of discussions about how we have had to resort to lawsuits to collect monies from the pipeline companies, how metering is a problem, how certain bookkeeping problems. And it is possible for a lower-ranking employee to come up with a suggestion that may save us $100 million. So in that case, I think $25,000 is not an adequate award necessarily, but certainly quite a good in general, I think it would be a good idea, though the bill doesn't require it, if the governor were involved. The ceremonial aspect of presentation of such awards are good morale builders and do bring the chief administrator of the state into contact with people working in the front lines, as it were. And I think that's one part of it that would be quite useful. Recently, a survey of state practices for recognizing managerial performance provided considerable evidence about the efficacy of such programs. And I speak certainly with a certain amount of private interest in my father, worked at Allison Air Force Base and received a $50 award sometime in the late 50s for a suggestion that saved the Air Force several thousand dollars. But I know it worked. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions by committee members? Thank you very much. Other individuals wishing to testify on HB 14, Diana DeSimone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Diana DeSimone, Director of Personnel. And
the Division of Personnel is interested in this bill because it does affect employee morale and productivity, and as we're all interested in cost savings. Private employers usually use some kind of bonus system or profit-sharing plan because they look at the bottom line, and they often reward people based on their profitability, either individually and in groups. But in the public sector, we're more interested in saving money and increasing efficiency. And so bonus systems and incentive systems are usually oriented towards extraordinary cost savings, and particularly in those areas that are not the responsibility of the employee to be efficient or cost-effective in. So to the extent that this proposed legislation would encourage employees to develop ways of doing state's work cheaper and better, I do believe the concept's a good one, because the people who do have a better idea should be rewarded, whether the reward is monetary or honorary. I prepared a zero fiscal note for the Division of Personnel for this bill because it was based on the assumption that the only effect on the division would be for the personnel board to adopt regulations and to decide on the exact monetary amount of awards over $10,000. But there are always some kinds of costs in actually implementing such systems. Somebody has to go through the suggestion. Somebody has to define what is a cost savings and certify that savings. And somebody has to notify the winners and the losers of the results of that program. In some other states, there are small staffs, and in Washington, they have an annual bill of $100,000, which is funded 2% of the cost savings through the program. So it's, I guess, what we would call here interagency receipts and not new money. And if, in fact, you want to go the route of having some kind of central agency administer this program, I think it certainly should be self-funding rather than have new general funds appropriated for that purpose. One item that I believe needs to be addressed is what happens to the money saved. If the money's going to be removed from the budget of the manager who makes the suggestion, you may find fewer suggestions. And for those who have employees who make suggestions, you might find that the department that's responsible for awarding the amounts may be a bit reluctant to do so, or at least make public what the cost savings are. So there may be some resistance on that part that you might want to take into account. That gets to the third point that I have, which is that the legislation as written does provide a good deal of latitude on the part of different departments to award or not award awards to different employees. And I do urge you to have a consistent approach to the award program itself. And that could be done either by centralizing the program in one agency or insisting on consistent regulations in its implementation. Finally, I believe that the award should be for proven cost savings only, and any projections of future savings should be based on actual savings in at least one fiscal year. Thank you.
Are there any questions at this time? Yes, Representative Barton.
Madam Chairman, maybe Representative Copeland said it, but I don't think I heard it. This is in lieu of the 3% merit pay raise that automatically goes on.
No.
Thought that we found a logical
solution. Any serious questions?
I'm very serious.
Representative Davidson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see a copy of Ms. Simone's comments in our paper, and I'd like to get a copy if I could.
Yes, we do have a position paper and fiscal paper.
Oh, exactly.
Madam Chair,
certainly I believe Representative Boucher has the.
Which do I have? What do I have?
These are the comments that you gave today?
Right. There is the position paper.
Okay, all right.
Additional.
A lot of things in there.
Could we have your comments? Would that be all right?
If I can get them retyped, I'll be glad to give them to you.
I
typed them up myself on a word processor before coming in, so I'd appreciate an opportunity to give you a clean copy.
That would be fine.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Copeland.
Not a question, but a question. After we had the original bill prepared, there was some discussion whether it might not be more appropriate to have the Office of the Governor in charge of this. And the reason for leaving the parameters fairly broad were that the regulations that would be drawn up should govern the degree of awards and the methods. In other words, leaving the administration a fair degree of latitude in rather than defining all of it in the statute itself, including what many of the suggestions that have been made. But there is a real question whether it's not more appropriate for the Office of the Governor to make the award, since Officially, we do believe that it should be awarded, at least in the higher case, to be made directly by the governor. And of course, that doesn't mean it's replying people down here. The governor does travel to find the time.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Martin.
Just another giveaway. You're paying more people for things they should be doing anyway. I don't know why you have to keep on paying people to be excel or to get to do their job, period.
Thank you very much. Did you have a question?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I think it's an interesting point that my colleague from 13C raises, but I think providing incentive here more than just getting people to do their job. If you provide incentive, I think you give people more reason to do their job better rather than just to let them sit there unrecognized for the extra efforts in many instances that they will make.
Thank you, Representative Kopanen.
As I remember, one of the features of the federal program was that it was possible to bypass one's immediate superior with a suggestion, which is very often the point of, shall we say, of bureaucratic inertia. And get suggestions higher up into the hierarchy, because it is the higher level that have to make the decisions on staffing overall. I would hope that the regulations that were drawn up were based on those of others, the experience of other states, and also of the federal government in more workable areas. So it's very often I found the people in the field are very willing to look at some of the, but feel frustrated by their inability to have everything go up the chain of command.
Madam Chair, may I make a comment to Representative Martin's suggestion? The state of Idaho has had some experience with these types of programs, and their legislation specifies that employees may not get awards for suggestions that represent part of their normal duties, or if they're in positions where they're supposed to be planning or looking at cost efficiencies. And so it's in statute, which it also could be in regulation, that those are areas that if you're being paid as your normal job to do those things, that should be excluded from awards. They should be for something extraordinary, is the way the Idaho statute reads.
Representative Martin.
You researched how many states automatically then had the incentive program, but also had the meritorious automatic, it's a pay raise for everyone. I think the last time the department did a checkout of all employees that get merit raises each year is 94.6%. And we want to ask what happened to the other four, were those positions that weren't filled. So in practicality, 100% of the people employed got increased in pay as meritorious. So how many other states have this thing where you have incentive plans and then you also have automatic meritorious incentive?
Most states do have merit pay plans, so that I don't have the exact numbers, but I would assume that most states have both that do have incentive plans. That's not just the one thing that they have.
As does the federal government. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else here to speak on HB 14? Yes, ma'am.
Rob and Susie with the Alaska Public Employees Association, and we have a position paper, and I think Representative Capone said everything that we had to say. We support the bill, and idealistically, yes, we probably shouldn't need an incentive or material gain for people to do their jobs, but that realistically, you do a better job if you have some kind of a goal. I mean, it's worked in the private sector all over. It works in the public sector in California, Idaho, New York. They all have the merit system too. So, but we do, as I say, what Representative Capone said, we concur with. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Are there any questions?
Any other testimony on House Bill 14? There has been a suggestion that this be located in the governor's office instead of in a department. I don't have strong feelings about that. I don't know whether
I was hoping we would get some testimony in one way or the other from the administration, but don't have any.
There is no one here from the governor's office, so I don't really know what to say. Representative Martin?
Most logical, because the government has a contingency fund that could be used for that.
Representative Donnelly?
Well, the
Does the sponsor have any thoughts of whether we should propose it firmly bound one way or the other? And as the bill moves through the committee process, I think that there will be additional testimony one way or the other. And I have not noticed that House bills come totally unscathed from the other bodies. But
Ooh, yes.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we pass this bill on to the next committee if we pass recommended.
Is there any objection?
For an individual recommendation.
For individual recommendation, certainly.
Okay. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, we will move House Bill 14 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Thank you very much for coming. We're making progress here today.
Boy, I want to roll.
And now...
You have any more bills in here?
Is that the end of the year for you?
And now we will move on to House Bill 12, which is Representative Ron Larson's bill, and Representative Larson is with us. And if you'd like to join us at the table...
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have to start out on a little light note here. The last time I called a lady madam, it was a high school counselor, and she said, "Don't call me madam, I don't make enough money."
Well, I don't make enough money either. You can still call me Madam Chairman.
This bill is co-sponsored by Representative Menard and myself. The reason for it, believe it or not, it's requested by several teachers in my district who are concerned about the future of the teachers' retirement system. And some of the things they are concerned about is, of course, the possible abuses under the present system, and probably one of the glaring examples that they most oftentimes point out is the possibility, of course, of an administrator to come into the state, be here for 5 years, bring in 10 years of outside service, they're 55 years of age, and they retire then at 30% of their salary. And as you know, some of the administrative salaries in the state of Alaska are in the 80, 90,000 range. So with 5 years of service in Alaska, they then retire with somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 a year of retirement. And of course, that does have a drain on the retirement system. Also, Madam Chairman, I'd like to bring to everyone's attention that the categories that are covered under presently consist of military service. I think military service should be recognized, and I think what I am suggesting in this bill will continue to recognize military service. But my comment would also be that usually someone does not start teaching, then leave the teaching field and go into the military, and then come back to the teaching field. And even if they did, oftentimes they are not in the military for more than 3 years, so it would not be handicapping them in any way there. The other area that this would affect is territorial service. Now, we've been a state for 27 years. I don't think there's very many new teachers coming into Alaska that have territorial service that they would like to bring in. So therefore, I don't think it would affect them. BIA service. The BIA schools, if I'm correct here, have been out of existence for 10 or 12 years. And therefore, if there's anyone who would be entering the teaching profession in Alaska who had BIA service, I would think within the last dozen years they would already have started teaching and claim their credit under it. And the third thing, of course, is outside service. I think the original intent of outside service in allowing a large number of years to be counted towards Alaska teachers' retirement was to encourage teachers to come to Alaska. I don't think we have to encourage teachers to come to Alaska anymore. I could count on my hand at least a half dozen or more that I know personally are young, qualified young people who would like a job in Alaska, but who cannot get a job in Alaska. So I guess what I'm saying, Madam Chairman, is in reducing the amount of outside service that you can bring in from 10 years to 3 years, I think is a very responsible act by the legislature at this time. I think it will keep our commitment into rewarding those who have served the nation in the military service, and at the same time then eliminate the three other provisions which are no longer needed anyway. And with that, of course, I'd be happy to answer anyone's questions.
Representative Martin.
Generally, in terms of supported by the bill, I was absolutely opposed when they passed it originally. even though I bought my military service, I thought it was absolutely ridiculous to get paid what I'm getting paid for those military years now in retirement. But anyway, that's the law, so I took advantage of it. The major part of this problem here is that we still leave that incentive for people out of state who are teaching to come to Alaska, and it is very detrimental to our students in state. Last year we verified that every school district within the state said you must have 3 years' experience before being hired. It's almost impossible for a Alaskan graduate from UAS or UAA or wherever they get their education degree to get a job in this state unless they do it part-time, supplemental, substitute. That, I think, is about you're allowed half year. Some combination is in substitution, you're allowed to get so many years of substitution equals 1 full year. But it's very hard on Alaskan graduates to get a job in this state. And here, by leaving that part in the program, we're making it all the more encouraging for our school boards to go out of state and recruit, because they use that as an incentive to get teachers from out of state. I would like to offer a strong suggestion that we delete that section altogether, because it's detrimental to hiring our own matured adult qualified teachers.
Madam Chairman, if that's a question, I take Representative Martin's suggestion that we leave in the provision for 3 years of military service and for territorial service or BIA service, but not allow any outside teaching time to be brought in. I guess, Madam Chairman, I can see the point that Representative Martin's trying to make. However, at this time, I would not favor such an amendment, because I do think it's important that we do recognize some experience. Hopefully, of course, what I'm trying to make here is a little Alaskan hire bill that would encourage the school board and do away with most incentives for them to bring someone from the outside. But there are sometimes some specialized fields. And in order to fill those specialized fields, I want to leave a little flexibility.
Any other comments? Representative Menard.
Yes, Madam Chairman. As co-sponsor of the bill in going over it with Representative Larson, in the fact that what we were trying to do was to protect the retirement system that's already in existence and not have the flood of years coming in. But I do concur with Representative Larson on the fact that I think we should leave it open at least for the minimum of the 3 years transferring it from outside.
Other comments?
Well, the other thing I might note is the 3 years, I believe, as long as I can remember, that has been there. Raising it from 3 years to 10 years has taken place in the last few years, and I'm just suggesting that it go back down to three.
Representative Menard, do you have anything else you want to say?
No comment.
Any other comments? Representative Davidson.
Through the chair.
I'm sorry. It's all right.
Presently, teaching would not be affected.
Any other questions? If not, we do have some other people who wish to testify. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, in effect, what this does mean, if a teacher got a job teaching outside or in the lower 48, and that teacher taught for 7 years and decided to come to Alaska, they would only be able to bring within 3 years of that teaching experience.
To get credited towards their retirement. Mm-hmm.
Even if they had agreed to pay all the actuarial expenses, et cetera, of the other. It seems to me that, I don't know, I'd like to hear from some other quarters on this, because I know that teaching is it's a dedicated art. And if you have a good teacher that you can encourage to come to your state, I don't think that we should limit them to 3 years. So I would have some questions as to limiting that outside teaching experience to 3 years, because I think that despite the fact that the intent of the bill is good, the intent of the local hire, and I also know many young Alaskans who would be excellent teachers, at the same time, I'm sure that there are many fine teachers out there that I would not want to deny the experience of my children to, just because it would be discouraged, because after 7 years, for example, they could only count three.
Madam Chairman?
Representative
Tyson. Just a quick response. And I understand what it's saying, and also I understand the unfunded liability of the teacher's retirement system, as I recall from the budget last year, was $128 million. That's assuming as things were cut off today, the retirement system would be that much short of meeting its responsibilities to those who are presently retired. I don't think it's a problem as long as we keep the teaching profession going and as long as there's new people coming in. But I think we also have to look at the fact that we are now taking over $26 million of the teacher's retirement match, rolling that into the foundation program in which local school districts are going to have to come up with that money at the expense of school children. And what I'm concerned about here, I guess more with the school children than someone from the outside coming up and losing 3 or 4 years of their teaching retirement. In other words, I'm just agreeing with you, Representative Davison, but I'm saying we have to start prioritizing once in a while. You know, what are we really trying to do in times of short money? You know? And I'm just trying to bring things back into perspective here so we can keep the viability of the retirement program, and that the people who are teaching now, who are literally thousands, are those who are presently retired, don't have to worry whether there's going to be a retirement program or not in the future.
Any follow-up before we take other testimony? Representative Davidson.
Well, my question, thank you, Madam Chair. Are there other areas where the funds are being drained, where people aren't putting the time in, but they're getting the benefits from the program? Are there other areas that we could tighten up to ensure that the fund is not depleted prematurely?
Well, I guess we could look to see if we're getting the most out of the investment earnings from the funds, and I believe we are. And I really believe at this time that the fund is actually sound. You know, I don't mean to give any indication at all that the teacher's retirement system is in trouble. I'm just trying to, I guess, plug up what I can see a potential leak before it actually gets there.
Thank you very much. If you'd like to join us here at the table, Representative Buckman is not with us today. So, okay, the first on the list for House Bill 12 is John Logan.
Madam Chairman, my name is John Logan. I am with the Division of Retirement and Benefits in the Department of Administration. You have a fiscal note and a position paper from the department. The department is neutral on this bill, and I don't have any additional testimony to add. I am available to answer any questions on the bill.
Are there any questions at this time? Representative Martin.
Why are you neutral? Will it save us money or not?
Representative Martin, I believe under normal circumstances, we would support a cost-saving measure like this. But what we would like to see is to take these cost-saving measures in the teacher's retirement system and put them in some bill that would also give the teachers an automatic cost of living increase, which is a very costly proposition.
You want to change it, what it is.
Something similar to that was done last year, as most of you know, in the PERS. They increased the retirement age in the PERS for new employees. They cut back on medical coverage for new employees as retirees, and come up with a number of cost-saving measures to offset a built-in automatic cost of living increase for retirees.
Any other questions for Mr. Logan? Thank you very much. Bob Manners.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bob Manners. I'm with NE Alaska. I have a couple of points I'd like to make. I have to say, as soon as Representative Larson indicated that this was requested by teachers, probably members of NEA, my discomfort with a couple of my comments went up a little bit, but I still do need to make. As we understand the legislation in terms of the Alaska Hire intent or direction or thrust, we feel very strongly about that and support that in its entirety. However, there is a group of people out there who may or may not be impacted that we have some concern for, and that is the group of persons who are certificated to teach, who are Alaskans, who have not yet been able to find teaching jobs, and do want to become full-time employed if they're subbing right now, and or become employed if they don't have a teaching job. We feel that that particular group of people who are Alaskans should have access to the same kind of a benefit structure or the opportunity for prior service credit or outside service credit that the current employees do have. And so if there was some way that that group could be accommodated within this kind of legislation, we'd feel much better about it. Another thought relative to this kind of legislation that may be appropriate for consideration, rather than restrict the amount of prior service credit or outside service credit, we might want to consider increasing the longevity of service before a person has access to purchasing it. In other words, to avoid somebody coming in with a seat for 2 or 3 years buying their outside time, maybe there ought to be a requirement that they would have to be in the state 5 years as a teacher before they could even begin to claim outside service credit, and then they could do it on a year-for-year basis up to, say, 15 years. I think that would head off the reference that Representative Larson made at the outset to superintendents who might be coming in from outside and getting rid of their high salaries, staying a short period of time, and maximizing retirement benefit. So that might be another approach to be considered to deal with the same kind of thing. Relative to the prior service credit also, it's our understanding that the employee is fully obliged for the whole actuarial cost. So it seems to me that it's somewhat of a wash, although once the time is purchased, I realize it becomes a vested benefit, and I assume that that would be the fiscal note reference that Mr. Logan spoke to. So those are the points we'd like to make relative to this legislation.
Questions from Mr. Manners? Yes, Representative Larson.
Thank you. I guess I have three. The first point, I think we're right on, because I'm concerned about the young Alaskan graduate who can't get a job because those with 6-7 years experience are being encouraged to come to Alaska to fill the positions, and therefore they can't. So we're right on there. The second point is the length of time in the state before becoming eligible to buy up time. I have thought about that a lot. And one thing that you didn't bring up that I have also thought about is probably the first 3 years you get a 2% multiplier if you bring it in. For any additional time after that, you get a 1% multiplier. So I guess I have considered alternatives there. And I would still go back, I guess, to the bill as it is right now. And as I said earlier, I can see the value of that earlier service and even recognizing it. But I can't, to the extent that I give it priority over trying to get more Alaskans jobs.
Other questions?
Madam Chairman, yes. One question that I'd like to throw on the table, and maybe Bob could help me with it, as far as what Cliff was, or what Representative Davidson was addressing on the fact of bringing experience in from outside, do we have any, and maybe you know, on the fact of most areas of the country, teachers transferring in, it's usually a pay increase from the areas that they're coming from. I'm just going to put this little scenario out, and I guess there's maybe holes in it all over the place. But and then we're moving into an area that has a higher cost of living, usually, and stuff. Do you have feelings of, is that a enough of an incentive, more or less, to hold water on that, or in the argument or the point that Representative Davidson made of attracting folks coming in?
I guess it's my opinion entirely. I don't think I have a database frame of reference if I understand your question. I think it's really an individual thing in terms of why people do it. I can't. You mean the retirement system being an incentive itself, and or the salaries and or whatever?
Right. Yeah.
Obviously the salaries are in some cases, but there's some parts of the country where the salaries are not that different. I think Alaska itself, the mystique or whatever, is still a major component as well.
Representative Donnelly?
Through the chair. Well, I didn't quite understand one of your comments. You said that when people come in from out of state, when teachers come in and they enter the retirement system here, that they're obligated to bring with them the funding from their prior location? Or can you re-explain that comment?
If they choose to claim it in the system here, then they're obligated to pay the actuarial cost at the rate prescribed by the salary at which they are being paid when they enter the end of the system. If a teacher from outside begins the teaching this year at a salary of $30,000 and they are going to claim 4 years of outside service credit, they are obliged to the system for the full actuarial cost of those 4 years.
Representative Davidson. Thank you, and that actuarial cost includes what the employer would have contributed as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I would defer to Mr. Logan to be sure on that, but that's my understanding.
Full actuarial cost is not the same as full cost. The actuary takes a look at what it should cost, assuming the teacher claiming the service stays with the projection on salaries, and based on that, he pays based on his entrance salary. Now, if a teacher happens to outstrip the salary projection, and at time of retirement his salaries are considerably higher than the actuary expected them to be, then he is going to get a larger benefit than the actuary projected. And he's going to get more for that outside service than would be expected.
Follow-up question to the chair. When you say they pay this, is this actual cash they have to contribute, or is this some later time deducted for benefits, or how does that work?
Well, it's an indebtedness to the system, and I think you have an option as to the way you pay it. You pay it up front or pay it over a period of time, is that right?
You pay it all in a lump sum, paid over a period of time, or in time of retirement, they can take an actual reduction to their benefit to offset the indebtedness.
Representative Davidson. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask the question of both Mr. Logan and anybody who can answer. But if in this bill we increased to 7 years the amount of outside service, but only contingent upon having taught for 7 years, would that tend to discourage the kind of problem that you're trying to address? And would that, and also, along with that, have that, let's call it transfer teacher, pay the full cost? I suspect there's some way that you can map out that full cost. Would that meet the concerns of depletion of the TRS?
Well,
Mr. Logan?
First of all, if the teacher were to pay the full cost, they have to wait until just at retirement time for you to be able to determine the full cost. If they do, it's not worth their effort to do it. Because what they're going to get is, for a dollar they pay the system, they're going to receive a dollar in return. The only time it's going to advance a teacher to claim the service is if, like I said, they beat the salary projection. The way it's working now is this retirement system is putting somewhere between 5% and 10% of the full cost.
Other questions? Representative, I'm really having trouble today, aren't I?
Madam Chairman, from experience from the department, it was my understanding last year when we were looking at the military aspect of this that most of them are not paying anything forward into it even when they retired, but that they're only allowing the interest to be paid when they get the retirement checks, and so therefore they're not putting any forward money, they're just allowing the interest coming off of the retirement check to keep them up to date. There's some discussion in that most of them aren't even paying for it. They claim it, and then they owe it to the state, and then the state charges them only the interest after they retire, but in the long run they're making money off of it.
I don't recall if we have any figures on what percentage pays it off before retirement and what percentage takes an actual adjustment. Now, once they make the decision to take the actual adjustment, that's irrevocable, and that decision pays off the indebtedness, and the benefit is reduced for life. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Last year when we were talking, maybe it was 2 years ago, when left on DeMille trying to make this actually a sound, we found out that a major difficulty was is that people would rather have it paid off when they get the check after retirement because there was no forward money out of their pocket. And if they retire for 5 years or 10 years, fine. You know, it's nothing out of their pocket. It's coming out of their claimed retirement. And therefore, the system was being charged an extra amount for that retiree who put nothing in the first place.
Madam Chairman, there was a provision in the TERS, and I believe it has been deleted now, that allowed the teacher to use their full retirement check. In other words, if they, at time of retirement, they owed the system, they would forego receiving their full retirement benefit until that indebtedness was paid up, and then they would start receiving their retirement checks. And I believe that's what Representative right. Martin is talking
but
about.
But that's repealed now?
And I believe that that has been deleted from the statutes.
Okay. Good.
Any other questions from the Manners? Yes. Representative Davidson.
Well, I guess for the layman here, I'm still trying to understand where the free lunch is and identify that free lunch.
Yes, Representative Larson would like to help you, I think.
Through the chair. But when someone brings an outside service, they pay for that outside service on their beginning salary. They retire under their three best years of their beginning salary. And I would say, and you might have to help me, but I'd say the average teacher who has taught 25 years in Alaska, within the first 2 years of retirement, has already withdrawn all the money that they had ever put in. So if they live beyond 2 years, after that, the money they receive is money that is not from what they paid in, but from other sources.
We have one other person who would like to testify on this. Let me call on Bob Green at this time, and if you can stay with us, Mr. Manners, we might have some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Green, and I'm with the School Boards Association. We would like to support this bill, although, quite frankly, we prefer the conditions of Senate Bill 73 that completely eliminates the eligibility of outside service. Primarily because, well, for several reasons, the targeted groups, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Alaska has been out of the, or the Bureau of Indian Affairs has been out of the school business in Alaska for 2 years. The last schools were taken over by the state 2 years ago. Veterans, the last war was the Vietnam War. Probably there might be a few Korean War veterans such as myself around. But that takes 30-some years of service. There are not very many people with that kind of service that aren't already retired. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is going out of business in the South 48 in the education business. Probably will be out of it in a couple of years. But my reasoning for supporting the bill is primarily a fiscal concern as opposed to an Alaska hire. Well, I don't have any objections to an Alaska hire. The system that we have regarding recruiting teachers is going to work nicely without an incentive to bring in outside credit. Let me give you some examples. Representative Menard's question, is there a difference between the outside and Alaska? It's common to see a starting salary in the South 48 to be around $15,000, could be under that or a little bit higher than that, depending on what they're doing in that state. I recently visited with some folks in the state of Virginia. They've compressed a lot of salaries to start at 18,000 but quit at 22,000. In the Seattle area, salaries will peak at 25,000. There are not very many school districts in Alaska that don't start higher than that. I think we might have a school district that has a $24,000 starting salary, but we also, Madam Chairman, have salary schedules that start at $32,000. And so the incentive is there to come to Alaska without any added benefits added as far as retirement benefits. The typical scenario for a teacher to come to Alaska is on both ends of the spectrum, either when they're starting their career or they're looking for a second retirement. They've retired someplace and want to come up here and do it again. Traditionally, we don't see a big movement of teachers or administrators mid-career to Alaska because it's a real significant move, and quite often there are kids involved and, you know, the family raising years, and so we don't see a lot of movement at that time. So when we see a salary $15,000 to $20,000 to come to Alaska for a $5,000 raise minimum is an incentive. We talk about the cost of living. There isn't much of a cost of living in a lot of places anymore. We are starting to look at figures that say probably a 6% difference in cost of living between Anchorage and Seattle. And so those kinds of things aren't deterrents as much as they used to be. And in the rural areas, salaries are commensurate with the costs. So the system will work. It's nice to say that this might be an Alaskan, higher Alaska bill. If it does that, that's fine. And from an employer's point of view, we don't have any objection to that, because there are some facts that you need to understand regarding employment that will come into play here. Number one, I have to take issue with Representative Larson's comment about the unemployed University of Alaska graduate, because it has to be a pretty incompetent person not to be able to get a teaching job in Alaska if you are a graduate, if you are willing to relocate in the state. Our unemployed teachers are geography bound primarily. First of all, going back to the University of Alaska, it cannot possibly provide the number of teachers that the state is going to need every year. That's why I say there's difficult to find an unemployed University of Alaska graduate. They cannot provide the number of jobs or the number of teachers that the system needs every year, while that their production is going up and the need is coming down. They haven't met yet. Some years ago, we used to say that the University of Alaska could only provide about 25% of the need. And so the rest of it is done by recycling people in the state, going from one job to another, and or going outside the state to recruit to bring them up here. We're always going to have unemployed teachers in Juneau, in Anchorage, and in Fairbanks, and in urban centers. And we will have them because they want to live there. They want to live in Juneau. Their husband is working for Health and Social Services or some other job, or the wife has got a state job, and they are place bound. They want to stay here. Those people can find a job if they're willing to relocate, but that doesn't necessarily impact this bill. What I'm saying is that we would support the bill because we think the system can work nicely without those incentives. We don't have to provide incentives to outside teachers to get them up here if they're necessary. And maybe it's the one area that I did agree with is that I too have some concerns about short-timer, primarily in the administrator ranks, that come up for the purposes of the second retirement. I would not like to see the door shut to the availability of those people for service here. I would merely like to see it restructured so that they can't come up and reap a second benefit significantly on relatively short for relatively short service. People asked, where's the hidden bennies? I have to say that one of the hidden benefits in the retirement system is the early retirement system that was passed a year ago. by my computation, a person can take early retirement, add approximately 6% to their benefits, and recoup whatever it costs them in a period of about 2.5 years. Most teachers with that kind of eligibility are certainly going to live 2.5 years, and so and it doesn't help the system any, because in most instances the cost to the district to participate in the early retirement buyout and the hiring of the replacement doesn't leave much for any cost savings to the district. So it's not a big money saver. And when you look at the as we will be looking at the retirement system from a cost benefit ratio, it isn't doing us much good. And then I would clinch my comments by saying, and especially in the light of the fact that Governor Cooper is recommending that the local school districts pick up all of the cost of the teacher's retirement system and give us a bill of approximately $23 million annually to pay, suddenly he has our attention about the cost of the retirement system. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Questions? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I would just like to make the comment that it's quite a relief to see the teachers and school boards maybe agree on something. And secondly, what is the nature...
I'm embarrassed about that, but I'll...
secondly, you spoke of the structure, the change in the structure. What would be the nature, what would that structure be? How would you change it?
Representative Larson and Representative Menard have taken a tempered position from what is to what ought to be. They have left in certain outside credits. I don't think we need any of those outside credits. Senate Bill 73 eliminates them entirely. I think that is a philosophical call on the part of the sponsors, and will be determined by the legislature whether or not you want to, for example, recognize and provide credit for military service. I mean, and from my point of view, we have been far enough away from any, at least, military actions regarding conflict that has traditionally been the basis for providing recognition, that probably it's not necessary at this point.
Two follow-up questions, and then how does this affect Coast Guard spouses in the state of Alaska as regards to the retirement system? And secondly, what are we doing to the Alaskans who choose to go south to teach? And thirdly, I'm not at all convinced that tightening up maybe the number of years before you could have it apply is not maybe a better way to go, because, again, I don't think that good teachers only happen in Alaska. And I think to deny ourselves or to discourage good teachers after, for example, if they're willing to come up here for 7 or 10 years, that to me makes them qualified to become part of the Alaska system, if they paid a fair share of what it would be costing to have them here.
The committee needs to understand that Cliff was one time the school board president when I was superintendent, so I think I remember how he thinks.
I may have changed.
The first question, regarding spouses of Coast Guard. Traditionally, that is going to kind of be a non-entity if they teach, because the rotation system will normally only have them here a short period of time. More than likely, they will end up, they have to be in a place longer than what the traditional Coast Guard assignment is in order to get them to start to build on any kind of retirement system. What will happen is they will they will be eligible to retrieve their retirement contributions when they leave the state.
Madam Chair, on that point, Mr. Green, it seems to me that we're setting up another unintended, but sure enough, it will happen that the Coast Guard wife is going to get caught again without a woman again, is going to get caught again with the short end of the stick. Now, a lot of people in the Coast Guard have come up here and they like it. The fact is that they can't stay here beyond 3 or 4 years and they get rotated. So say they come here for 3 years, they extend for 3 years, and then they have to go out for 3 years. And then they come back for 4 or 6 years. What happens to the 3 years that they were out for under your scenario as well as under your scenario?
Okay. And in that scenario, and let me help you build the case, suppose they do take, say that would be roughly 3 tours of duty here, and they go outside and they come back and say they want to retire here. Say the husband retires, but they want to continue teaching. They would lose the time. Yes.
I don't think that's fair, Madam Chair.
Representative Larson.
Madam Chair, it's possible they could. If they were here for 3 years, went outside and taught for 3 years, they could bring those 3 years in or give them six.
Under your bill.
Yeah.
Representative Martin.
Yes,
yeah, I did have the other question about Alaskans going out to other states.
I'm sorry. We'll finish those questions.
It's typical of what I'm going to
ask.
Every state has retirement regulations, and they're all different, but if I don't know. You'd have to pick a state, and we'd have to research it to find out what they permit. Usually every state that has a system has some kind of vesting procedure where if the teacher teaches in the state for a required number of years, if they don't make that required number of years, they get to take their own contributions out of the system. If they make the required number of years, they get to take their own contributions and the state's contributions.
Representative Larson, just as a follow-up on that point, and then we'll come back.
Yeah, I don't know who could answer it, but let's say, for an example, someone's an attorney in California and they moved to Alaska to become a judge, or someone worked for the state of California and they moved to Alaska and works for the Department of Health and Social Services. Can they bring in any of that retirement time?
Mr. Levin?
Only in the teacher's retirement system does such a provision exist.
So if an Alaskan chooses to go outside, they're under the California system or the Oregon system.
It's a special provision.
Just within teaching. Madam Chair, and I would think that some comparative data from other states like Texas, California, Washington, and Oregon, and maybe a couple more would be useful, at least for me to make my decision.
Any other questions at this time for Mr. Green? Representative Martin?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Anything else? Representative Menard?
Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion that we move this out of committee at individual recommendation.
Okay, before we act on that, may I ask one more question, Mr. Manners?
Certainly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Green. Mr. Manners, if you could just return to indicated that there were a couple of suggested improvements, the first of which, as I recall, was in some way trying to accommodate the young teaching assistant, the Alaskan that was attempting to get a job and having some of those years of employment credited. Now, perhaps I didn't understand you correctly, but if you remember,
I probably didn't.
Your testimony, if you would return to that first point, you said you didn't know exactly how we changed the bill to do it, but you were concerned about that group.
There are a number of Alaskans who are certified to teach who are not teaching, and I think a substantial number of that group would like to teach. The probability of them becoming employed in teaching before July 1, the suspense date in this legislation, therefore having the advantage of claiming their outside service credit, would be lost to them. And that's the group under an Alaska higher perspective that I'd like to see this bill accommodate somehow. I don't have a good suggestion But there are people, not necessarily brand new to teaching either, people who have been up here a number of years who are certified, who are still trying to find a teaching job, and or have decided now that they want to go back to teaching again full time. But they are Alaskans.
Mm-hmm. Representative Larson.
Madam Chair, they are accommodated for 3 years. If it's an Alaskan student who can't get a job here, they go and get a job outside, and for the, at least up to 3 years, they would still get their credit once they did get a job in Alaska. So they are compensated some.
We would like to see that group have access to the same kind of opportunity for outside service credit that the current teachers do have.
Question is, I guess, when does the door close?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyone else have any questions for Mr. Manners? Thank you very much for joining us. Okay, there is a motion to move House Bill 12 with individual recommendations. Is there discussion of the motion, Representative Davidson?
I think this is a hasty decision if we go ahead and pass this out of committee. I think that we have not fully identified those who would be disenfranchised, those who would be shut out. I think there's still more discussion that we need. I would like to see more data as to comparative situations in other states. And I would also like to know if, in fact, there is some way that we could adjust the figures so that a person would have to, say, teach 7 to 10 years before they could count anything, let alone three. And so I would hope that we would seek out more information before we pass this through to another committee.
Other discussion? Representative Menard, would you have an objection to waiting until next week for action on this bill to provide some staff time to be able to at least find some of the answers to Representative Davidson's questions? If we pick a date certain next week?
I don't have any problems, Madam Chair.
Representative Larson.
We would be happy to help you gather the information. If I guess I fully understood what information you're looking for.
Next committee.
Representative Davidson, I understood that you particularly wanted to know what other states were doing.
I would particularly like to know what the states of California, Texas, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Wisconsin, and New York do in this regard. As far as getting teachers from other states and how they deal with the problem. I would also like to know what would be the cost or the damage to the system of extending a situation whereby a teacher would have to teach at least a minimum of 7 years before they could count anything toward their retirement, and then they could, after that point, have up to seven, or that figure would be negotiable, the number of years that they could bring in from outside.
Representative Weisenberg.
On the second point, I think we might be talking about a second piece of legislation that could be brought up and discussed and debated separately. On the first point, I think if you're asking to research all those states, we have the state statutes of all the states in the United States right over here. Probably someone from your staff should get together with mine, and we'd be able to help them find that information for you.
Representative Menard.
Madam Chair and Representative Davidson, the next role referral committee is Health, Education, and Social Services. Would you feel comfortable if those issues that you brought up were brought up by some person in that committee so we could refer this out? It does have a three committee referral, and then it goes to finance after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could just go ahead. Okay, I will agree to send it out of committee, but I'll just put do not pass on it.
Okay.
No rec.
Okay.
Okay. It is my feeling about this committee that if people are very reluctant because they want additional work to be done, or if they think there's going to be a committee substitute, I'm not going to push bills out. Okay. But there are a number of other referrals on this bill,
mm-hmm.
and so if you don't have any objection, Representative Davidson, it's fine with me to have the bill continue on its way.
Well, Madam Chair, then how am I guaranteed that these concerns will be met or that this other information will be, sorry?
Madam Chairman, it is most appropriate, and I've done it a number of times, to give recommendation to the next committee mm-hmm. and to give testimony at the committee.
Okay. And even to propose a committee substitute at the next point mm-hmm. along the way, if after you look at some of the additional states, you become convinced that there's a better approach.
Okay, well, then I would withdraw my objection.
Okay. Then the motion is to pass House Bill 12 out of committee with individual recommendation. If there is no objection, it is on its way to Health and Social Services. Is there any other business to come before the committee at this time? Representative Larson?
I just want to officially go on the record after saying we will work with Representative Davidson to answer his questions.
I'm sorry.
Is it that we will work with you to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other business to come before the committee at this time? If not, if the committee secretary will give to us the original bill, we will sign on it, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much, committee. Five bills on its way.
5 years. You have to deal with it again. That good job is again.
The joy.
The edge.
The retirement
so it doesn't really, does it help then?
Really tough, I think. Well, do I want to do pass or well, I don't know. I'll think about it for a minute whether I want to do pass.
Get double paid from what they get down there, and then all the way to the other 20 times. Rotate that university, I don't think.